Part 4, Bono, the Rolling Stone Interview. This podcast is sponsored by Rhapsody. Access more than 1 million songs for less than the price of buying one CD a month. Details at rhapsody.com. And now, back to Rolling Stone editor and publisher, Jan S. Wenner's exclusive interview with Bono.
Tell me about Bob Dylan. What was his influence beyond what you already... You told me about listening to early on his greatest, that first greatest hits album. What's the... First off, tell me about your relationship with him. How did you first meet him? What were the circumstances of that?
I went to interview him for the Hot Press, an Irish music paper. A great one. And...
When was this?
1984. I was hanging around backstage, and I had a very beautiful Bob Dylan moment. This man who had painted his face before going on stage walked up to me and said, "Can I have a photograph with you?" Such a Bob Dylan thing to do. Ask the young punk for the photograph. So...
Oh, this is when he's on Rolling Thunder?
No. 1984, so just after that. No, a good bit after that. So... That made me laugh, made me smile. We went backstage. We talked about playing chess. I think he might have had a chess set back there. I loved the game. Van Morrison was there. I interviewed the two of them. That's a great thing. It exists somewhere. And he was responsible, I think, for Rattle and Hum, really, because he's the one who said in that interview, you have to understand the past. You have to understand where the music comes from, the originators, both in Irish and folklore. You know, he was talking to me about the McPeak family and the Clancy brothers and all these people. And then talking about Hank Williams and Lead Belly and people like that. None of whom we knew. Post-punk band from the suburbs. No past. Only a future. So he was the one that sort of pointed us back. So that was that. I can't remember the name. I think he came out on the Joshua Tree tour. He was around, played a few songs with us, hung out, came back to the hotel with us. He was very candid, very open with me. And the band hadn't really got to know him. Came down during Rattle and Hum, played keyboards, went out to his house, and we wrote together.
What was that writing that song on?
Love Rescue Me was one. With another song that myself, T-Bone Burnett, and he started called Almost Made It This Time. T-Bone was a guiding light. T-Bone knew Bob. I think T-Bone may have brought Bob along. And then I just had some. I think he was just keeping an eye out for me. And you know, in truth, I probably didn't realize what this meant. You know, and I may not have respected his privacy the way I should have.
In what sense?
Just you know, I people say, "Oh, you've written with Bob Dylan." I'd say, you know, I tell them what happened, and you know, not realizing that his privacy was sacrosanct. So I don't know why he continued to be my friend, and he kind of comes and goes.
What's hanging out with him like?
I find him to be, you know, the least obtuse person in the world, except when there's more than a few people in the room, I think. You know, he's much better one-to-one.
He wrote, did you read Chronicles?
I have eventually, yeah.
You have eventually read it? What do you mean?
I've been so busy.
You have to eventually do it.
No, I have. I've just read it recently. I'm embarrassed to say.
Well, there's a one that there's that wonderful chapter, that Lunar episode with you.
I read it, and I was very flattered and moved to be included in this great book. And
I mean, I said, you know, you must respond to that book at a level as a fellow writer and artist and singer and seeker to the kind of extraordinary document that book is.
Yeah, I would consider myself to be more of a fan than a friend. Mm-hmm. He might call me a friend. I would call me a fan. Mm-hmm. And I find him very sort of old school, you know, just ancient values, mm-hmm. ancient wisdom. For a man who helped to give birth to the modern era, he's really coming from a much more ancient place. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely a pilgrim, a sojourner, a troubadour. It's almost a medieval. Mm-hmm. Way he sees the world in terms of performing, and he makes me laugh so much. I mean, I listen, but also in the music. Mm-hmm. And I just find myself laughing out loud on listening to him. You know, in Love and Theft, he has him crying with, you know, Mississippi. You know, in his top 20 great songs of all time, for sure. But then, you know, there's a nut joke, you know, in the next track. You know, and I'm laughing out loud. So, but for a person like myself who's trying their hardest to keep their dignity, in a very undignified era and trade where your own opportunism can trip you up, mm-hmm. in any moment, he just reminds me all the time of what's possible. And the privacy, I suppose, that I'm afforded by living in Ireland, he has had to fight very hard for, but he has it, and his position is unarguable, and the collision really of the Beatles and Bob Dylan gave us the universe that our planet is in.
What are your favorite of Dylan songs or records?
Visions, Joanna. Uh-huh. Probably my favorite Dylan song. And it's funny how the night plays some tricks on you and you try and get some quiet. Right. We all sit astounded.
Doing our best to the night.
Doing our best to the night. Mind blowing.
Do you like that whole Blonde on Blonde?
Yes.
That's your favorite?
Bring It All Back Home, I loved as a teenager and still love. The humor. Discovering some of the references as you get older. Mm-hmm. Just realizing what that was about.
He's a big Bible.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of that in him.
Yeah. The quest. You know, I mean, it gets easier and easier to call a truce with the world when you are materially well off. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you? But you mustn't. And in a way, you're in the best position to ask the hardest questions. Because the thing that people are fighting, you know, trampling on each other for, you have. And you can tell them that it's not enough. It's something. It's better than nothing, but it's not everything. And he blew that whistle. And I think that we all owe him for that.
What about Bruce?
You know, Bruce taught us so much. How to play arenas and not rip people off. How to communicate to the back of the stalls. How to be emotional, how to be operatic and not overblown. And yet we're so different. You know, we couldn't be more different.
Yeah, I remember saying to Bruce, you know, all these characters in your songs. You know, I was just in my 20s. Why don't you write about yourself? You ever written a song in first person?
He looked at me, his kind of eyes darkened. He goes, what's there to write about? What's my life? I play gigs, I go home. You know, chastising me.
But, one of the great moments of my life was sitting in Wembley Stadium when he was hotter than the summer, and he dedicated Promised Land to us, to the U-Tours or whatever it was. It's just a signpost.
What's your personal relationship with him like? Do you go out to the farm? Do you go out to the farm in Jersey and visit?
No.
See each other?
No.
On the road?
No. We bump into each other. He, you know, I think deep down he's quite a conservative guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's. I admire that in him. And I would think that he thinks I'm, you know, a bit all over the place. You know, he would like, because, you know, I'm a more experimental character. So I'm sure he scratches his head. And, but he's like a sort of an older brother who tells you to stay out too late. You know what I mean? You know, he's like,
because he's so conservative.
Well, I think just, you know, it's just like
just right now.
It's conservative in the sense of not experimental.
Why was it so appropriate for you to induct him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I don't know, but I enjoyed it. It's just, and I'm very fond of John too, John Landau. I kind of like the people around Bruce as well as Bruce. And I think Bruce taught some very valuable lessons, like how to hold on to your life as a civilian, how to disappear out the back door in your civvies, in, you know, back to, you know,
he taught you those lessons?
Yeah, ordinary life. I mean, I'd like to teach him a few lessons too.
Like?
How to hang out in the south of France. How to disappear into, you know, a continent like Africa, where people really don't know who you are.
What are your favorite Bruce songs?
Darkness on the Edge of Town. The early Van Morrison influenced stuff, While the Innocent East Street Shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
And then this this sort of Elvis-like howl that he has. It's kind of haunting, spooky music that he can make. On the last album, here and there, you know, it turns up. It's like spooked. I like when I don't know the landscapes he's traveling through. I like when it's when they're a little topsy turvy, and when, like on this album, when you feel he might get lost.
This is the 911.
Him getting lost. I mean, not a character. The new album's called "The Devil and
The Devil and Dust." Did you like that post 911 album, which was called?
Didn't get to me. The Rising didn't get to me as much. Amazing guitar player, by the way. I mean, really one of the great guitar players. Like, people don't talk enough about Neil Young as a guitar player. People don't talk enough about Bruce as a guitar player. And I always admire a man who marries above his station. You know? A rock star who, you know, he may not have an argument in the band, but I hope he has one when he gets home. I have a feeling he does. She is a sexy... She is hot stuff. That red-haired woman, you can't not like a person who goes home to her.
So now, you two and the Rolling Stones are the two only two bands really to operate at a certain level in this world, at the arena level, having a band together that long. What is the relationship between the two bands in a kind of abstract, in a kind of aesthetic or competitive level, or, you know?
Well, it's not
Not that it's competitive.
It's not competitive because, remember, we want them to win.
Right. Not
because if they win, they increase our value.
Right.
just being practical. I want The Streets of Love to be a hit, not just because it deserves to be. That's one of the best songs I've heard in the last 10 years, but because in 15 years, we might write something like that. And if it can't be a hit for them, I certainly want to figure out a way how it can be a hit for us.
You guys have got to be referencing each other. I mean, I came to Zoo TV with Nick in 92. And he was designing his tour soon.
Yeah.
And so he was there checking it out.
We invented the B stage. We invented the idea of going into the middle of a stadium or arena. That was our idea.
Well, how did you feel when it showed up on his tour?
Flattered.
Did you ever take the occasion to elbow him about it?
No.
Where'd you get that one?
The debt is always going to be much more in their direction. Musically.
So you're very happy.
And
You owe it to them?
And oh, much more. Much more. I've learned much more from the Rolling Stones than they're ever going to learn.
What did you learn from the Rolling Stones?
Swagger. Flirtation with an audience. Taking care of business.
Taking care of business, sense of...
Care of business. It's not sexy to not know what's going on.
In your own organization.
In your own organization. I always respected Mick for that. He made those guys very wealthy. And
much more so than you have done. I mean, he's the manager of the group,
he's
as well as
the group,
producer of the tours, as well as the lead singer.
Yeah. But they made him very cool. It's worth remembering. And you know, Keith, who always reminds me of that Bob Dylan line, to live outside the law, you've got to be honest. You know, who has enormous personal integrity. You know, the way he talks, you know, about the way he wouldn't talk about women, the way he would light a cigarette for you, the way he carries himself He's much, much more graceful than people realize. And, you know, I know he's got some demons that he's, you know, dealing with. I'm sure it's not pleasant to see that being worked out. But when he sings, should have known at the first I was the worst kind of guy for you to be around. The worst, you know that song? It's amazing. It's an amazing song. There's another one on this album, I forget what it's called. He rings true.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I think is it's a shame that he and Mick don't get on better, because the songwriting has got to, you know, they're doing this well without that kind of relationship. Can you imagine how well they would do if they were actually ringing each other up going, I have a better verse, I have a better hook? Can you imagine that?
Just going back to the relationship between the two bands, you watch what they do?
Yeah.
You see their shows?
Yeah.
Do you pick up ideas besides what you learned from them? Because they're certainly, he's out there, as I said, watching everything you do, making notes. He wants to be, they're supposed to be the greatest rock and roll band in the world, and you're the world's biggest band.
I think greater is a better accolade myself.
Uh-huh.
And they might watch their step. you know, their body of work is, you can only stand at it in awe. And Mick's a great journalist, he's a great lyricist, you know. He described his world very well, with humor, with intelligence, and the odd Polaroid.
Do you think your sound is really kind of more appropriate to a stadium?
Yeah, we make music without a roof over its head.
Uh-huh.
Whereas they come from the clubs.
Right.
So it was a harder job for them to make it work outdoors, but they have.
They're playing a little more like intricate and intimate stuff, where you're dealing with big walls of sound and echo and edges. Edge seems designed.
Yeah.
To have move back and to have these waves.
That's right.
And your stage is more electronic. It seems more of a contemporary stadium design, modern thing. In a certain sense, more relevant to the...
It's a harder job for them, I would have thought, mm-hmm. to be great outdoors. But they are. And they are incredible. I've been to see their shows, and I've... they play Start Me Up. They get to that middle eight, you make a grown man cry. I'm there with tears in my eye. I'm there with tears coming out of my face. So I guess you could call me a fan.
What are your favorite Stone songs?
I like a lot of stuff from the later albums. Like Out of Tears from Voodoo Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Control.
Mm, love that, yeah. Tell Me How I've Changed.
Love is
Strange, and yeah. Here's the Voodoo Lounge.
You make me feel it. We play that all the time,
yeah,
in our house.
Yes. On the new record, there's one like that. Not Love is Strong, but it's the third track.
You got Rough Justice, you got... How's it work out? There is a kind of sexy song. But, I mean, going back to... As I say, the early stuff, Paint It Black, through to Give Me Shelter. And then, stuff like From Exile on Main Street, which, you know, maybe one of the reasons I'm living in the south of France a lot of the time, because they made that album around the corner. And there's humidity on there. There's a certain lifestyle that I relate to, and so I like all the songs on Exile, even though some of them are not songs.
Do you think Satisfaction is their greatest work, or
it is
a great.
It is truly one of the great singles. Yeah, it's right up there.
But I love You, Love Off, their later stuff. I did too. Their complicated, complicated sound.
It's really interesting. It's just watching them work together.
So when you and Mick get together, mm-hmm. you have some laughs?
Yeah, he's very funny, very charming, and you know that again. This kind of, I think he's quite a conservative character. I mean, you know, he's got the yacht club, you know, jacket on or whatever it is. You know, it's a relief to be around somebody not in the pursuit of groovy. You know, it's just like, oh my god. And kids with impeccable manners. One of his young children came up to me and said, "People think my daddy's the devil, and he lets them."
Talk back to this podcast. Call 206-888-6252 or email your comments to rspodcast@gmail.com.